Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org.
Well, good morning. Hi, everybody. Tess, nice to see you. And happy Thanksgiving season. Hope you had a nice one. I want to talk today about giving thanks, starting with a passage from Dogen about joy. Here it is. When we train in any of the offices of the monastery, we should do so with a joyful heart, a parent's heart, and a vast heart. A joyful heart is one of buoyancy and gratefulness. You should consider that you were to be born in the realm of the you should consider that were you to be born in the realm of the shining beings, you would be absorbed in indulgence with the qualities of that realm, so that you would not rouse the recognition of uncovering the way, and so have no opportunity to practice. We can also reflect on how our lives would be were we to be born in the realms of hell beings, of hungry ghosts, animals, or jealous gods. How difficult our lives would be in those four situations, or if we had been born in any of the eight adverse conditions. We would not then be able to practice together with the strength of a monastic community, even should it occur to us to aspire to it, let alone to be able to offer food to the three jewels with our own hands instead our bodies and minds would be bound within the limits of those circumstances, merely vessels of contraction. Almost done. One more paragraph. The Zen monastic standard states, the monastic community is the most excellent of all things, because those who live thus live beyond the narrowness of social fabrications. Not only do we have the fortune of being born as human beings, but also of being able to cook meals to be offered to the three jewels. We should rejoice and be grateful for this. This life we live is a life of rejoicing, this body a body of joy, which can be used to present offerings to the three jewels. I hope you will work and cook this way. This is the very end of Dogen's instructions to the cook, the Tenzo. And cook this way, using this body, which is the fruition of thousands of lifetimes and births, to create limitless benefit for numberless beings. To understand this opportunity is a joyous heart. A body of joy. This body is a body of joy. That is the only place in Zen literature that that phrase comes, to the best of my knowledge. It's unusual and refreshing. It makes me happy to hear an old, crusty old Zen master, and one of the most famous ones, talk about joy in that way. You just don't hear it very often from the old masters. You hear it maybe from from us 20th century folks, Thich Nhat Hanh, many others. But you don't find it so often in the old texts. And why be joyful? Dogen says the key to this kind of joy that he's talking about is gratitude. And he starts out by saying, be grateful just for being human. He says, just think, you could have been born in the realm of the shining beings, which that would have been horrible, because it's just too easy there. They're you know, lying around being fed grapes, surrounded by comfort. That's the realm of the gods. That's the top realm. There are six realms in Buddhism. These predate Buddhism, by the way. This idea of six realms. Top one is the realm of the gods. Second one is the realm of the demigods, or the jealous gods. It's pretty good for them too. They've got time on their hands, and what they use it for is just to bicker with each other about, why aren't we one step up? Boy, it looks good up there. And then the human realm is next. And below the human realm is the animal realm, which is in which, you know, animals do fine, but they don't have the kind of knowledge that we have. They're not able to attain that. And then the hungry ghosts, those ghosts who have huge mouths and tiny necks, so they're always chewing, they're always hungry, but they can't get it down their throat, and so they have big swollen bellies. They just always want more. They represent our greed. And then the hell realms, which is filled with anger and hatred. Those are three, or really like the three poisons for me. I'm not sure if that's the way they're set up to be, but it seems like a perfect parallel to me: ignorance, greed, and hatred. And here we are right in the middle, in this privileged position of having enough suffering and having enough ease. And you know, all of us probably now and then dream of an easier life, of maybe moving to somewhere else, to a tropical island somewhere, and kicking up our feet. Dogen says, please don't do that. Don't dream of an easier life. You need difficulty. You need even calamity. That shapes us. It allows us to practice. And also it makes us more compassionate as well. It has us understand the suffering of others in a way that we wouldn't otherwise, which also allows us to practice. And I think that, you know, just, okay, so Dogen says there's these six realms. Like, don't forget that. Don't forget that there are other possibilities out there. Don't forget that you could be somewhere else. So look at your life in a wider perspective. That's what Dogen says with these. Now, I think all of these actually also have or represent, you know, aspects of ourself. But I think what Dogen says here is, when you may be tempted to whine about life, don't just whine. Leonard Cohen has this great phrase that I've mentioned before, or it's in his very last interview for the New Yorker magazine, and he says, Zen practice is a little like boot camp. He says, because there he learned that whining is the least appropriate response to suffering. We can have all kinds of responses to suffering. And we may whine. But through practice, I think we can realize more fully that there's another way to be besides complaining. our instinctive complaining. Leonard also says in a beautiful speech that he gave once to a Spanish, when he received an award from Spain, he says, "Never lament casually. Only do so in the strict confines of dignity and beauty." And I think all of his songs kind of, many of his songs, kind of elevate lamentation, elevate kind of suffering, so that we're not just complaining about it, but we're putting it in a different frame. And since I've read this from Dogen, this is about a year ago, a little more, I have been thinking more about this privilege of being human, being a human being. The chances are small that we, in this vast cold universe, that we would end up on this rock that somehow miraculously, gave birth to life. And then one thing after another, until human beings were evolved. So we weren't born as a bee or a chicken or a dinosaur, but as a human being. And in this century, when we, compared to some other times, have it pretty good. If anything, we may be a little too close to the realm of the gods sometimes. Reading this book on the history of violence, it's not a bad age to be born into. I have been thinking more in the last year about that privilege. I don't think it's a right to be born a human. It's a privilege. And then this summer I heard a really neat thing on the radio, Freakonomics Radio, about gratitude, that fit right in here. It turns out, they talked to a social scientist, Freakonomics guys, about who studied gratitude and many other things too. And it turns out there are so many benefits that come from just taking a little bit of time to be more grateful. So for instance, some people write down something every day, one thing that they're grateful for that's happened. Or another exercise they had some people do was to write a note once a week to somebody who's helped them along in life. And they found these people slept better, and they went to the doctor less, and they had less depressive symptoms from doing these gratitude exercises. And so the question that they came up with was, why don't we do it more if it helps us so much? And they came up with an answer. They call it the tailwinds, headwinds asymmetry. So we have a tendency, a pretty strong tendency, to notice the obstacles in our way, the things that are keeping us from our goals. We're wired to think about how to overcome the next thing and to spend a lot of energy on that. And rather than appreciate, those are the headwinds, rather than appreciate the tailwinds that we have, the things that have helped us through. And noticing the headwinds more makes us feel like our life is hard. Harder than maybe it really is, because we notice that we're concentrated on that. And we tend to also assume that our life is a little bit harder than the other guy's life, which then increases our resentment. And it also gets us on something called that this researcher, Thomas Gilovich from Cornell, has also studied, which is the hedonistic treadmill. So, you know, we run after the good thing, and then we get the good thing, and we feel really good about the good thing, and then it wears off very quickly. So we get the new big TV, and wow, so cool, what a wonderful thing this TV is. And then a month or two later, it's just, you know, if the TV breaks down, it's like, what? So the good feeling wears off quickly. And because we're running after the next thing, and the next thing, and the next thing, a better job, a better life. And then we get used to that, and we keep running. And they've tested this asymmetry in a lot of different areas. And so it has, because it has this tendency to make us feel like we are, we're getting the short end of the stick a lot of the time. So in siblings, they did sibling studies. Most the sibling tends to feel like the other sibling got a better deal. In academic departments, our department is getting a less than average deal. And even sports, when the schedule comes out, you notice the hard teams and not so much the easy teams. And then they said, as I said, that the concentrating on our disadvantages makes people feel more resentful. It also inclines us to think that we need to roll the dice, for instance, on a leader, because we're in bad shape. And also it inclines us to cut corners and to be more accepting of breaking rules. So these scientists in the end, you know, suggested that we ask ourselves, just like we do with confirmation bias, to spend some time considering the opposite when we notice ourselves concentrating on how hard life is. To spend some time considering the opposite, how we're helped along. What are my tailwinds? What and who has boosted me along? And Dogen also says, think about it. Think about the state that you're in, the privilege that you have. But he says that in the context of practice, of the practice of Zen. He's doing Zazen every day. And I think that this practice of ours is a kind, makes gratitude easier to find. It kind of lays the groundwork for gratitude, I believe. Because what do we do in this practice? We stop. We stop chasing. We get off that treadmill, that hamster wheel. And we temporarily work to stop desiring anything at all. In this practice, we really ask you to do something difficult and kind of counterintuitive, and that is to lose everything. To lose all of your passions and your hates and your loves and your opinions, to lose your very humanness, what we think of as making us human, to lose your thinking self for a moment, to become subhuman, below what it is to be human, and to become zero, that quiet state that we share with flowers and with trees and with birds and with cats when they're resting. And to behold the world this way. And then, after we've done that work, after we've found that place, even if it's very roughly, to come back to our human self. And when we do, I think we come back a little more fresh. After we sat for half a day, we behold the rain a little bit differently, the green outside, the taste of coffee. Those very simplest of human pleasures. And I feel that, I bet you do too, after Zazen. It's even more exaggerated after you've sat for quite a long time in a row. And I think, you know, for just... I treasure the feeling that it is enough just to be human. And appreciate the various things, the very simple pleasures that are involved in that. I think that is a real remarkable gift of practice, and it is a subtle joy. It's not the, wah, yay, rah, rah. It's a very subtle happiness. Contentment. Now, of course, and I want to give the United States a point here or Abraham Lincoln, for creating this holiday for gratitude once a year. I mean, it does, of course, it is true that the very day, next day, you get right back on the treadmill and start shopping. But at least for a day, we have this day which is set aside for gratitude. To pause for a minute and to give thanks for some basic things. Now, often those things are things like family and friends and of course the plenty of the harvest, the food that we have. But I'd like to encourage all of you to go further than that to take some initiative in noticing these small moments of beauty in your life. Because I think if you do that and get used to doing that, it builds on itself in a way. It changes something. And I say that from experience because, honest to Pete, for a year and a half now, since I've read this, I've been working at it. You know, consciously thinking about it more, and it feels to me like it's made a small difference in my life. Yeah, I won't go through all the examples of that, but one that really struck me so hard, it came up spontaneously, but I was having a driveway moment listening to This American Life, and you know, I just couldn't not listen to the rest of the story about a lawyer who helped a curmudgeon who got roped into taking a public defender case, and then completely turned around and helped this guy get out of prison who'd been stuck there. Completely changed his worldview. And afterwards, I was crying. And I thought, after that, you know, what a privilege to be able to be moved like this to be an animal, to be, you know, that is able to have this feeling. And I'll die one day, but to be able to have this feeling is such a, what a gift for this time that I'm on the planet. So, like I said, Zazen, I think, really does work in here. And Zazen itself is beyond gratitude and no gratitude. But I think if we make a life habit of doing Zazen, then there's a better chance to be caught by these moments of beauty and feel that soft joy. You know, I was imagining like a 10-point scale where 0 is Zazen, no thinking, and 10 is being on fire with thought and anxiety. And maybe we live mostly between, what, 3 and 8, something like that. When we're driven, when we're directed in our lives, making lists and getting shit done, feels to me like, you know, that maybe we're 6 or 7. But I'm just suggesting that in our lives, not just in our when we're doing Zazen here, but in our lives, if we can more intentionally hang out around 1, not just at 0, but around 1, with this kind of new birth and appreciation for life and being alive in the world. I'm just about done, but I just thought I'd read a poem from Mary Oliver called Mindful. Fits right in. Every day I see or hear something that more or less kills me with delight, that leaves me like a needle in a haystack of light. It was what I was born for, to look, to listen, to lose myself inside this soft world, to instruct myself over and over in joy and acclamation. Nor am I talking about the very exceptional, the fearful, the dreadful, the very extravagant, but of the ordinary, the common, the very drab, the daily presentations. Oh, good scholar, I say to myself, how can you help but grow wise with such teachings as these, the untrimmable light of the world, the ocean's shine, the prayers that are made out of grass. As a hymn to gratitude, to this same kind of gratitude, I think, that Dogen's talking about. And I just want to rest for just a moment at the end here on what Dogen says, please be grateful for, the second thing, and that is for Sangha, for the community that supports this kind of work. And he says, remember the blessings of being able to live beyond the narrowness of social fabrication. Society has this narrowing effect on us, and society tells us to fill our roles, to keep our nose to the grindstone, to keep on that hamster wheel. But this practice, this group of people, encourage us to open up our world, to widen our view, and see not only what will benefit me, but to see the joy and beauty in the world, to see the world closer to the way it is. And then, Dogen says, to be able to serve, to be able to serve others with this joy. You see, we have to do the work to feel it, but then to move out into the world with this joy and to change the world. This great gratefulness is just, doesn't have anything to do with changing the world. It's just noticing the world. But we can't get stuck there, of course. There won't be any change in the world, and we won't manifest our bodhisattva ideal. But if we can act from this place of gratitude, from this place of subtle joy, then I think the way in which we move through the world, the way in which we meet suffering, the way in which we do our work is different. And I think we can be of a deeper benefit to others.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.